space monkey here. You not ready? Primetime wrestling.
Welcome to Not Ready for Primetime Wrestling, the only gathering that didn't get canceled in Ohio this week. I'm Jerry J. Alcalkin, along with Charlie Butter.
Oh, shit. So, I guess we should probably jump into some reviews, I guess, today, right?
Yeah, but not really a lot of wrestling news because shit got canceled. No?
Yeah, I guess technically Eric Stevens probably wrestled his last match.
unless the collective still happened. Yeah, and Jack then, up now, it's not been canceled.
And then technically, I guess, if that, then it'll be there, but his last match in Ohio was the Akron show, which sucks. I mean, he won against Mance Warner, but still. Okay. So, what did you do this week? What did you watch this week?
So, it's WrestleMania season.
That it is.
And I, generally, the month before WrestleMania, I was watching old WrestleMania for the most part anyway. So, I decided I was going to watch what's considered one of the best WrestleManias of all time, WrestleMania 10.
All right.
March 20th, 1994, from Madison Square Garden in New York City, New York. Vince McMahon and Jerry the King Lawler are on commentary. The King Lawler's return from making 4 or 5 months with a rape allegation.
Okay.
And all that happening. Okay, we get a nice little opening video of WrestleMania 1. They're making a big deal about this being the 10th WrestleMania.
Okay.
Then we get Little Richard singing America the Beautiful.
Right on.
This gets like a 7-minute rendition of America the Beautiful. It's good because Little Richard is good, but...
My Little Richard can sing America the Beautiful as well. It's not a 7-minute version. It's usually like a 30-second version, but...
We then get a recap package leading up to our opening match, which is quite possibly the best opening match of all time. Owen Hart versus Bret Hart.
Ooh, yes. Definitely a good match. So I was thinking about watching looking at the results to the show to kind of see what you're going to be talking about, but then I thought it'd be better to just be surprised. And then I remember like one match on this show. Probably two, if I really think about it. I completely forgot this match was on the card, and I really enjoyed this match. I remember the finish of this match because I love it, and I love when it gets used in matches because I think it's a really solid finish.
Match is fantastic. Get back and forth. You got both guys doing their big move, both guys going for sharpshooter. Bret appeared to injure his knee about halfway through, Owen working on the knee. At about 20 minutes in, Bret Hart goes for the victory roll. Owen Hart gets back and countered. 1, 2, 3. 20 minutes and 20 seconds. This is an easy 5-star match.
I guess I was thinking of a different finish. I was thinking of the sleeper hold.
You're thinking of Bret and Piper at WrestleMania 8.
Okay, and he pushes out of the corner and gets the roll up that way.
Yeah.
I fucking love that finish. They do it in this match, but they don't. It wasn't the finish, right?
Correct.
Okay, that's yeah. Okay, yeah. I remember now. Okay,
yeah. From there, Todd Pettengill get a quick interview in the back with Owen, and then we get the introduction of Guy Sperling for the Hair Club for Men, and he brings out his latest creation, Howard Finkel, who is actually wearing a very realistic looking toupee. Like I actually bought in the being legit.
Okay.
It was literally the only time they had Howard Finkel wore hair. Like, they did Raw the next night. He was bald again. But... From there, we get a mixed tag team match. Bam Bam Bigelow and Luna Vachon versus Doink and Dink.
Ooh, okay. Match now, which version of Doink is this? Is this Born?
The kid Gray Apollo.
Okay.
Magic, all right. It's 6 minutes. It's kind of short. You get some comedy with Luna and Dink and Bigelow and Doink for the most part.
Is this where Bam Bam does the splash with Luna on his back? Or am I thinking of something else?
You're thinking of something else.
I'm thinking of Vader when Vader did it.
Yeah. Which is why you get Vader to begin with.
Yeah, see, my mind knew what I was thinking of, but then I don't know, like the front part of my brain knew one thing, and my question was like, no, just keep going with this line of questioning. Got it. Okay.
Bigelow hits the diving headbutt off the top, pins Doink, like about a minute. It's okay. From there, we go up to a skybox, and a Bill Clinton impersonator is getting in the box with Perkin and Jack Tunney, and IRS is getting behind him for some reason. From there, we go into what is billed as a Fall Count Anywhere match between Macho Man Randy Savage and Crush, with Mr. Fuji and Crush in corner.
I feel like we might have talked about this before.
Okay, so this match, it is Fall Count Anywhere, it's almost like a Texas death match where after the fall, the loser of the fall had 50 seconds to get back to the ring.
Okay.
So it's a little different.
I think I've seen this match before then.
I'm sure you've seen this show at some point.
I think this match sucked balls.
It's a weird match, and part of it's the stipulation giving it a weird dynamic. So as Savage is coming to the ring, Crush attacks him, drops him throat first on the guardrail, gets the pin like less than a minute in. Savage looks like he couldn't get back in the ring in plenty of time. Fuji cheap chops him from behind with the flag, knocks him down. Savage just gets in with like 2 seconds left in the kicking second. They fight in the ring for a little bit. Savage hit the flying elbow in the ring, has to roll Crush outside the ring to pin him, because otherwise Crush is already back in the ring, and what's the fucking point? Which Vince McMahon does not pick up on right away. He's like, why can't I go for the pin? Oh, now it makes sense.
You made this match, you dumb motherfucker.
Right. Okay, Crush looks like he's going to be out for the entire 50 seconds. Fuji dumped a pitcher of water on him to wake him up. Crush gets back in the ring. They fight for a little bit more. They wind up fighting down the aisle, fighting in the backstage area. Savage gets the pin. And Savage tries to tie Crush up.
Yeah, this is what I remember it for. He tries to fucking like string him up and it doesn't work. Yeah. So he's got to still fucking sell it.
Yeah. So Savage wins. Like, I really wanted to like this match. I want to praise this match. I like the general concept behind this match, but it's just such a weird dynamic. And the fact that the finish came off the way it did, like, I can't praise it. Todd Pettengill again, the pregnant buck, interview Bill Clinton and IRS. I don't have no idea why IRS can actually be in there. We then get a recap video of the Fan Fest, which is basically the precursor to the WrestleMania accent that they do now. Okay, from there, the women's title on the line for the first time since WrestleMania 2, as Alundra Blade defends against Leilani Kai. Leilani Kai was in WrestleMania 1, lost the women's title to Wendi Richter that night, and this match is at least a little bit better than that match was, although not much. It's pretty short. Alundra Blade wins with the German suplex in like 3.5 minutes. From there, we're getting ready for our tag team title match, Men on a Mission taking on the Quebecer. But as Men on a Mission is doing their entrance, we go back to Todd Pettengill, who is talking to Rhonda Shear from USA Up All Night. And Shawn Michaels comes in to hit on her. And then Burt Reynolds cockblocks Shawn Michaels and they walk off together.
Oh, shit. Burt Reynolds cockblocks Shawn Michaels?
Yeah.
Damn.
Now, to the tag team title match, this is what it is. It's not very good. And thankfully, it's fairly short. It's about 8 minutes. Jock and Pierre are good workers, so they've made it somewhat entertaining. But finish is Pierre on the floor. Mo, like, jumps on top of Mabel and splashes, and they both end up landing on Pierre. Meanwhile, Johnny Polo glides Jock out of the ring, so that Men on a Mission return to the ring and win by countout. Oh. Shitty finish.
PCO was in the match. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Do you think when they did that double splash on him that he shit his pants?
I don't know if he did or not, but I probably would. Like,
he would need 18 packages of toilet paper.
18 30-kick pack of toilet paper.
Yes. Because that'd be a lot of shit coming out. Them two fuckers jumping on you.
Okay, so then we go to the first half of our double main event. It is the first of two WWF Championship matches. Bret Hart and Lex Luger went over the top rope at the same time in the Royal Rumble that year. So they both get a shot at the championship, which is why Bret wrestled Owen earlier in the night, so it's quote-unquote fair for whoever wins the first title match. Like, everybody wrestled one. Never mind the fact that Brett already had over an hour to rest at this point, and the first title match is just coming out.
Right.
Your special guest ring announcer, Donnie Wahlberg from New Kids on the Block, a.k.a. the less popular Wahlberg brother. Rhonda Shear from Up All Night as the guest timekeeper. And the special referee I agreed to by all parties ahead of time, Mr. Perfect.
That's perfect.
Match starts off pretty decent. Luger gets some good offense again. And then once Yokozuna goes to getting heat, it's like a 10-minute nerve hold. It's just long and slow and plodding. Luger finally starts making his comeback. He hits the big forearm with a loaded elbow. Cornette hops up on the apron. Luger slingshots him in, knocks him out. He brings in Fuji, knocks him out. Finally goes for the cover. Mr. Perfect correctly tries to get the manager out of the ring. Luger throws a fit. Shoves Mr. Perfect. Perfect disqualified collects Luger for abusing the official. Yokozuna retain. Technically, it's the right call. Perfect goes to the back. He's being interviewed by Todd Pettengill. Perfect trying to explain what happened. Luger comes out and argues with him. Perfect again. Got their kick one. You can't bring manager in the ring. That's illegal. Two, you can't put your hands on an official. And it's a big pull apart. And all the officials come in and separate them. The post-match stuff was actually pretty good, although the match sucked. And then we never actually got the Luger-Perfect match. But Perfect left like 2 weeks later because he didn't want to jeopardize an insurance policy.
What insurance policy?
When he fucked his back up, he had like a really big insurance policy. So if he would have actually started wrestling, he would have lost his premium on it.
Okay.
So that's why they teamed to come back against Hunter Hurst Humphrey a couple years ago and didn't go through with it then either. Game reason. Do y'all remember that? They did an angle in like in 96 where Hunter Hurst Humphrey was bringing out the different women.
Oh, you said a couple years ago.
A couple years later.
Okay, I was like...
A couple years later.
Mr. Perfect's been dead for like 15 years, bro.
couple years later.
Okay.
Yeah, but they did the angle where Perfect was coming out and taking 100 women, and they finally agreed to a match, and then they... Yeah, Perfect hurt his knee, and then attacked before the match, and ended up leading to Mark Merrow defending the Intercontinental title in place, and losing the Intercontinental title to Hunter.
Okay.
So from there, Harvey Whippleman is introduced by the Fink. Whippleman insulting him, going, "You're still ugly, you just have hair now." Out comes Adam Bomb. Fink shoved Harvey Whippleman, then out comes Adam Bomb to confront him, then out comes Earthquake to confront Adam Bomb to go into their scheduled match, which last 30 seconds Earthquake win with the Earthquake Splash.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was pretty much... It took me longer to explain it than the match actually went. We then get Pettengill getting an interview with Cornette, Yokozuna, and Fuji. Basically promising that, well, Bret Hart hurt anyway, so it should be a pretty easy win. From there, we go to the match that everybody remembers from this show. Razor Ramon defending the Intercontinental Championship against Shawn Michaels with the Eagle in the corner.
Yes.
Then get the match that is pretty famous because they were supposed to go like 12 minutes and went 20 and canceled the next match and everybody went pissed.
But was it worth it?
As a fan, yeah, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
There were other ways they could have shaved time before they ever got to this point as well. Like, Little Richard could have done one version of America the Beautiful instead of three. I don't think we really needed the Adam Bomb Earthquake segment on the card at all.
Right.
You got some of the dead time with some of the, like, fantastic, you did a fan fest. You could have just shown that on Raw. Like, I didn't need to see that on a pay-per-view.
Right.
Deagle interfered once, like, really early in the match, and even though Earl Hebner ducked and Petey interfered, he kicked Deagle back to the locker room anyway. Which was kind of weird. Realistically, like, this match put the ladder match on the map. It was great for its time. If I were watching this today, just because they've done so much other cranky shit in the ladder match since then, it probably wouldn't be classified as one of the clacking if it happened today exactly like this.
Right.
But because it was the first and it's historic, you almost have to give it 5 stars. It's really good.
I'd say like 4.
Their match at SummerSlam 95, the rematch, I thought looked a lot better than this one. I thought it had a lot more psychology to it. But nobody talked about that one. I thought that one was better than this one, but it's still really good. It's still worth watching.
the Ultimate Ladder match for me, from the time that I started, like, I had always known about those two, but there was no way to watch them without getting a hold of, like, tapes of those shows. Thank God for the network. I've been able to see them since. But The Rock and Triple H.
SummerSlam.
Yes. SummerSlam 98. One of my all-time favorite ladder matches to this day.
I'm partial to Edge and Christian against the Hardy.
Oh, that's a good one, too. I wish I could have been there live for that. I wasn't. And
I was there
really
for that
upset.
One live, which is part of the reason I'm partial to that one.
Yeah. First ever tag team ladder match. Yeah. Yes.
Which we will eventually cover when we get back to the Cleveland Project.
Yes.
So from there, we go to the locker room. Supposed to be a 10-man tag team match on the card that ended up getting cut for time. Because I threw together something real quick where the heel are arguing over who the team captain is. If they can't decide, there's no match.
Who were the team supposed to be?
Honestly, I'm going to have to look that up.
I thought you would have expected me to ask.
The problem is, like, they didn't tell you who the face team was. Like, they only showed the heel. The heel team was IRS, Rick Martel, Jeff Jarrett, and J-E-R-R-E-T-T. The head shrinker with Afa. I know Bob Hawley was on the babyface team. Give me 1 second.
Is that when he was a race car driver?
Yeah, that was actually race car era Bob Hawley. Bob Sparkplug Hawley. Okay, so the babyface team was... Actually, he might have still been Sparky Plug at that point.
Okay.
Thurman Sparky Plug, the 1-2-3 Kid, Tatanka, and the Smoking Gun.
So they were literally going to face Cowboys and Indians.
On the same team, no luck, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I have a feeling that the match that aired on Raw a couple, 3 weeks after that, but it was taped the next night. I have a feeling it was exactly what it was supposed to be at WrestleMania, because I've got a match time listed here of 8:43 for it.
Uh-huh.
And that feels like that'd be about right when you cut some of the other shit out.
So they did the exact match with all the same exact spots instead of, like, giving it more time or doing anything to make up for it.
Nice. That's my guess. I'm not sure.
Nice.
Okay. From there, we do go to our main event after the hype video package for this match. It is the second WWF Championship match, Yokozuna with Jim Cornette and Mr. Fuji against Bret Hart. Burt Reynolds serves as the guest ring announcer. May or may not been completely hammered. My guess is he was. I don't know.
He wasn't. His mustache definitely was.
Jenny Garth from Beverly Hills 90210 is the guest timekeeper. And the special guest referee, as agreed upon by all parties, Rowdy Roddy Piper.
You know who would have been a better guest ring announcer? Garth from Wayne's World.
Yeah. If only for the entertainment factor. Brett actually come to the ring, still calling a knee injury from the opening match, which is fantastic. Bret Hart definitely professional. This match is a little bit better.
Professionally boring.
This match is a little bit better than the Yokozuna Luger match because they're not nearly the dead time. Like, if Brett wants to have a good match, go heat doing shit. Kind of forcing Yokozuna to work a little bit. Yokozuna go up for a bonkai drop, Luger can footing. Brett rolls out of the ring, cradle him for the cover, 1-2-3. Yokozuna chasing Roddy Piper to the back for like a split second, and then Piper comes back out for the celebration after Luger comes out, staring Brett down, and then shaking hand, raking hand. And then all the baby faking start coming out, and then Vince McMahon leaves commentary, and he enters the ring and joins the celebration. And then as they go off the air, Owen Hart comes down the ring and stares Brett down because he beat him earlier and he won the title.
And at this point, when it goes off the air, Vince McMahon then takes Bret Hart's trunks down and starts stroking his Canadian penis and inserts it into his mouth and swallows that giant red and white load.
Wow, I know you're using hyperbole, trying to be funny. This was, in a way, Vince McMahon's way of apologizing for not believing in him when he had the belt the first time and trying to go back to Hogan. Yeah. So, figuratively, you're not wrong. But realistically, though, this is one of the better WrestleManias. You got two all-time clanking matches in Bret and Owen in the ladder match. if only for those two matches, watch the show. There's some decent stuff on the undercard. It's got a lot of filler. But the top two matches, or the two best matches, are really fucking good matches. Everybody calls the ladder match best match in WrestleMania history. I don't even think it's the best match on the card. Don't care how good a show that is. But. So what did you watch this week?
I watched an episode of Monday Night Raw from the night after WrestleMania. So I listened to my review last week, and I did lots of uhs and ums when I edited it, so I had to, like, edit the fuck out of my review, so I'm going to try to do better this week. So I watched WWE Raw from March 18th, 2002. We started off with Hulk Hogan coming out to a thunderous chorus of cheers. Like I was kind of telling you about this before, the crowd was so damn crazy for Hogan coming out. This was like nothing I've seen in probably the past 10 plus years. I mean, holy cow.
Yeah, well, I went to the SmackDown in Cleveland about a week before then, and Hogan had not turned babyface yet because he was still building the match for The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of the same way. Like, the crowd went nuts for like 5 minutes. I'm looking around going, no, he's a bad guy now, right? It was insane.
So,
another one for the Cleveland Wrestling Project later on down the line.
We all know what happened at that WrestleMania. That was WrestleMania 18, Hogan versus Rock. Hogan starts to talk about the match. The Rock comes out, says last night was a pleasure and that he would do it again. Out comes Hall and Nash, who insist on talking about being the poison and injecting poison like it's some type of weird innuendo, but it's really not.
When the NWO came back,
I remember that to a T, but it was like they were trying to like really still put that over, and it stuck out like a sore thumb as something that was like a Vince McMahon push, like, keep talking about the poison.
Well, that's
talk about the poison because I injected the lethal dose of poison, the NWO, to kill my creation.
That's good shit.
Yeah, so they were talking about that, and Hogan, you know, because Hogan had ripped off his NWO shirt because he still came out wearing it, even though he said that he was done with the NWO. Hall and Nash challenge Rock and Hogan to a match. Rock accepts, makes fun of Nash, and Hall, he calls Nash Big Daddy Bitch, and makes a sound again, which I fucking love. It always cracks me up. Calls Hall Chico and does like the little thing again. Fucking amazing. Rock is so good. Rock cuts most of the promo here against them and then hits the what you gonna do line, and then Hogan hits the just bring it line. So that was kind of cool.
My one issue with this, though, is Hogan leaving the NWO, but you're supposed to be NWO for life.
Well, Hogan's immortal, so that doesn't really count.
So Hogan would be NWO forever, then, because he doesn't die.
I don't know, man. I'll tell you. So next up was an Intercontinental title match, back from commercial. Rob Van Dam, champion, comes out first against Christian. This was like a 4-minute match. Christian hits a reverse DDT. He rolls out, grabs the Intercontinental title, and tries to leave with it. DDP, who I believe he faced the night before for the European title and lost, shows up and throws Christian back in the ring. RVD hits a spin kick and a 5-star frog splash for the 1-2-3.
And with temper tantrum era Christian, coming with a temper tantrum.
No, this is not yet. I think it was probably the next week it might have started once the split happens. But we haven't got there yet.
No, it was definitely before this. When the WrestleMania match, DDP pinned Christian. Mm-hmm. DDP got on the mic and went, I'm impressed, Christian. You didn't lose your temper. And then he threw the temper tantrum.
Yeah, there was no temper tantrum on this night. So
starting to fade that out,
I guess, yeah. Up next, we see Jericho entering the building. A fan who I believe was one of the La Resistance. I think it was one of them. He looked familiar. was basically like, oh, wow, you're Chris Jericho. The fans can't wait to rub it in your face. And Jericho goes, rub what in my face? And he goes, oh, that you lost the title last night. And Jericho proceeds to beat the ever-loving fuck out of this guy. And then he like picks up his stuff, fucking kicks the guy one last time, then spits on him and leaves. He's not going to give the crowd a chance to, you know, make fun of him. They advertise Lita versus Trish next. As this match is getting ready to happen, they tell us still to come, Linda McMahon has an announcement, and the Dudleys versus Billy and Chuck is going to happen tonight for the tag titles. Raw is brought to you by the Scorpion King, Stacker 2, and the Whopper. So that was fun. Lita wins this match in probably 2 minutes. She countered a Stratisfaction and hit a moonsault and got the 1-2-3 there. Women's champion Jazz came out and attacked Lita after the match. Trish started helping Lita, and then Ivory helped Jazz. So, and I'm not doing any better. I'm saying lots. So awesome. Linda McMahon announces the brand extension and that Flair will take over Raw and McMahon will be on SmackDown. And then she announces that there will be a draft next week and the women's champion and men's WWE champion will be available to both brands. They cannot be drafted.
I really wish they would have kept that for the tag title too, but the tag title until they instituted the kind of tag title were really freaking bad at around this point.
Yeah. Vince McMahon comes out and cuts a promo. The crowd chants, na 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 na, hey hey, goodbye. Vince says Flair will be a miserable failure as Monday Night Raw owner, and Flair comes out, cuts a promo. They go back and forth a little bit. Vince punches Flair and mocks him doing the strut like only Vince can do. Flair fires back and puts Vince in the figure four to end that segment. Up next was Booker T and Kurt Angle against Edge and Kane. And you pointed out that they were basically doing WrestleMania rematches, but not in a way that you could tell. Like, this was basically two matches put together. Booker T gets an axe kick on Angle, who is his tag partner. He accidentally hits him. And then when he helps him up, Edge hits the spear on Angle when Booker T jumps out of the way. Angle ends up going back and forth with Edge a little bit. Edge hits an execution on Angle. Kane grabs Booker T's leg and holds him as Edge gets the three off the execution.
I'm still amazed that they had the entire Edge Booker T WrestleMania match based around a Japanese shampoo commercial.
It's crazy, ain't it? And here comes my personal favorite moment of the show. Hardcore title match, Maven versus Al Snow. This match starts off like dog shit. They exchange trash can lid shots back and forth, and Al Snow tries to wrestle Maven because he's, you know, Maven's trainer from Tough Enough. All of a sudden, there's a referee and Spike Dudley shows up.
24-7 rule. They're not waived for even though the hardcore title is already on the line.
But that doesn't really matter at this point because guess who else shows up? Brock fucking Lesnar.
His TV debut.
Who spinebusters Al Snow through a garbage can, which like forms around Al Snow. It's sick spinebuster. He then hits a beautiful F5 on Maven, who sold it brilliantly. And then poor little Spike thought he was going to fucking do something. And gets picked up by the throat off the ground into a fucking powerbomb. Into another powerbomb. Into another powerbomb, which so fucking brutal. I know there's GIFs out there on Twitter of it, but if you can, check it out because it's holy shit, dude. It was the best moment of the night. It was like that whole thing with Lesnar beating the shit out of everybody. And then JR apparently didn't see Heyman standing at ringside during this entire thing happening, but I saw him instantly before I saw Lesnar. Heyman enters the ring and holds up Brock Lesnar's hand, and the crowd starts chanting ECW. Because, you know, the crowd actually still liked ECW at the time, and it wasn't ruined by Vince McMahon yet.
They will still chant fucking ECW. Not nearly like they used to.
No, not used to, because ECW was that shitty third brand for how long, and it was ruined by Vince, so.
You do it, especially in old ECW town, you can still hear it.
Yeah, I guess. If something cool happens, then they kind of go for it. There's a recap of the Rock Hogan Hall Nash build up for the match later on tonight. We cut to Lita and Matt Hardy making out. William Regal interrupts and says that basically Matt could potentially go to SmackDown and Jeff could go to Raw, and then so could Lita. And that's actually what happened. So,
although both Hardy were back on Raw together pretty quickly, but they had a handicap match against Brock on pay-per-view like 2 months after.
I feel like, wasn't version one, once the split happened, there was like the whole version one. I think this was before
this. It wasn't too long after this, but it was before the next WrestleMania for sure. But
I think it was at, I want to say it was at Backlash they had that match.
It might have been. Yeah, it was pretty quick after that they had the handicap match. It was either Backlash or Judgment Day.
Yeah, it was real close after that, but I want to say that then Matt kind of did like the version one thing. So maybe I could have swore in the initial draft they got split. We'll look into it, and we'll talk about it later here in a second. Give us a second. Okay, so we're back. I was wrong. Jeff, Matt, and Lita were all drafted to Raw, and Jeff Hardy had a match against Brock Lesnar at Backlash.
And then it was Matt and Jeff against Brock and Heyman at Judgment Day.
Yes, and then Lesnar won King of the Ring. And around that time, Matt Hardy went to SmackDown and started the version one stuff. Yeah, so that's
Matt Hardy working a Raw house show on August 18th of 2002 and working the SmackDown taping 2 days later on the 20th.
Okay.
So that's where Matt moved to SmackDown. I'm assuming a trade of come forward. I'm not going to bother looking that up.
But yeah, we're not going to go that far into it. So yeah, so they kind of teased that a little bit. Up next, tag team title match, the Dudleys with Stacy Keibler against Billy and Chuck. So this was another quick match, like all these matches were super quick. Stacy tried to distract Billy, who wasn't having any of it, because at the time, Billy and Chuck were, you know, secretly gay, supposedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Because back then that was taboo. Now it would just be like, okay, love is love, what else you got?
I'm sure everybody would shit on it today, but the payoff of that angle is still one of my favorite angles of all time, honestly.
That makeup was very convincing, I will say that much. Anyway, so Stacy, seeing that that didn't work on him, grabbed one of the tag titles and got in the ring and hit him with it right in front of the ref. As soon as she hit him, Devon and Bubba hit the 3D, but the ref called for the DQ. The Dudleys realized what happened, got pissed, and decided to put Stacy through a table.
Poor Stacy.
Yeah.
Stacy was always one of my favorite. When I was reviewing the show for the smartmark.com back in the day, I never called her Stacy Keibler, I just called her my future wife.
Mm-hmm.
You can see how well that worked out for me.
I mean, you could, like, she could die someday and you can marry her corpse, I guess. I mean, the route we're going, I mean, that could still be a thing, I guess. I don't know. Up next. Oh, actually, I take that back. So, Jerry Lawler was very upset about this and had a really great line.
You can never get away with it in 2020, but in 2002, it was pretty good.
Yeah, this is a pretty solid line. King goes, instead of bombing Afghanistan, we should bomb Dudleyville. He was very upset that they put Stacy through a table. Triple H, the undisputed champ, arrives. And he's cutting his promo about how he won last night. Stephanie interrupts as Jericho wants his rematch. And instead of in 90 days, he wants it next week on Raw. Triple H says, okay. And he goes, how about I up the ante? We'll make it a handicap match. Jericho and Steph versus Triple H. And if Steph loses, she has to leave. So we know how that ended up.
Yeah, she left for like 3 months and went back and then locked another leave match a few months after that and came back a couple months after that. They lost another Luke Leaf match. I went, who fucking cares anymore?
And now it's time for our main event of the evening. Scott Hall and Kevin Nash against Hulk Hogan, who comes out to Jimi Hendrix at this point, but it's edited, and The Rock. So you got to see this match because I was watching it as you came over. Any thoughts about this match? You kind of were calling some stuff in the match that I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, I noticed Hogan hitting the leg drop with the wrong leg on Hall late in the match.
And that actually led to the finish where Hall got pulled out by Nash and they got counted out. And The Rock and Hogan won by count out.
Count out, I don't necessarily mind like a TV match, but the intentional count out, like why would I want to see the match again when you got yourself count out on purpose? Like,
right, but did we even get like a follow-up finish for that? I don't think we did.
I don't remember. If we did, I don't remember.
Because I don't even think they had a match at Backlash.
No, Hogan won the belt from
Triple H
at Backlash.
Oh, damn. That's crazy. Yeah. Triple H lost the belt within a month of winning it? And then I know Hogan lost it to Taker.
A month after that.
And then Taker lost it to Rock.
Like 2 months after that.
And then Rock lost it to Brock.
A month after that.
And then Brock lost it to Big Show.
3 months after that.
Okay.
And then Show lost it to Angle a month after that. We're still not at WCW 2000 level.
No, but you know what? I would like to see that. Again, that kind of, because that was actually a fun time. Like all that is very interesting to me. And there's some really good matches in that time frame. And I feel like that's what title matches are kind of missing right now. Like there needs to be more than two champions a year for the WWE and Undisputed titles or Universal titles. I think there needs to be, you know, maybe 3 reigns, 4 reigns, 5 reigns. I'm okay with up to 5 reigns a year. Like, get the belt around, get some interesting storylines going. Stop doing the same 4 fucking guys facing each other in different combinations on Raw week after 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 week. Oh, I broke. See, you broke me.
Yeah, I don't necessarily mind having a couple of quick title changes. I think 2002, if you're going, Jericho had started the year with it. Go Triple H, Hogan, Undertaker, Rock, Brock, Big Show, Angle. That kind of title changing in 10 months, basically, but the first one can March. And the last one can December. Go Kevin title changing in 10 months, that's too many, I think.
But if you really look at it, it doesn't feel that much. Like, everything felt like it was given. Like, it was shocking that the title changed hands that many times back-to-back like that. But it was a really cool lead-up to everything. Like, the way that Rock won it, and then he faced Brock. Brock got put over. And then Heyman turned on him with the Big Show. I mean, it was all kinds of interesting stuff. Like, it was a very interesting time. I feel like that's what it's missing. Like, Brock Lesnar wins the belt. He's gone for a bunch. Oh, maybe he's not gone all the time. Maybe he wrestles a handful of times, but guess what? He doesn't lose the fucking belt, so it's one guy with the belt for all this time. I'd rather see 7 title changes than one person with the belt for a year at a time with 5 or 6 defenses. I'd rather have 7 different champions. I think it keeps it more entertaining. And keeps it more like, oh, what the fuck's going to happen next? It doesn't make me go, well, that belt means nothing because everybody can win it. That's the cool part. I want to see what's going to happen next. Maybe fucking some guy from that just showed up on the show is going to win it. Like, that's entertaining to me. That's what draws me in. And we don't have that. We don't have the possibility that fucking Drew McIntyre might win it. And then the next night on Raw, he could face Aleister Black and fucking lose it. Like, we don't have that kind of like craziness anymore. I miss that. I wish that was still a thing. That would get me to tune in more often, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not getting here and saying there has to be one set rule for how long title reigns need to go or how many title changes need to be in such and such a period of time. You can make anything work if you do it right.
I'm just tired of it because look, like everybody was calling for The Fiend to have a super long reign, which I'm fine with if they want to do that, but you can't have 2 people having super long reigns because that's almost what we were getting out of it. And I'm just kind of over it. Like,
Okay, I'm not saying I wanted Goldberg to be the guy to beat The Fiend.
No, that was never, ever something I wanted. And I don't care that Roman's going to be champion. That doesn't bother me. But it also doesn't make me want to watch either. So I don't, SmackDown, really, there's nothing on there for me right now that I care about, really. Yeah, so,
but as great a character as The Fiend was, the matchups were god-awful. Like, I can't... The Daniel Bryan match was okay. And that was largely because Daniel Bryan can make anybody look good. But that was the only match of that title reign that was any good at all. Like, I didn't care to see the matches. Like, I'd rather get the belt off them and have the belt be in good matches. But I can care.
Well, they got the belt off them. It's not going to be in a better match, so... Sorry.
And it's going to be a 4-minute match at most. I'm okay with that.
If you wanted to have the belt have better matches, then it should have been Daniel Bryan defending it against Drew Gulak in Philadelphia.
That match was so good.
It was very impressive. I really enjoyed it. Dude, the safety police were out in full force on that match, too. Like, oh my God, he tried to kill Daniel Bryan. He hurt him. He has got a history of all these injuries. He shouldn't be doing that. He got da-da-da. And I'm like, he's a consenting adult. He can do what the fuck he wants. If he wants to take 15 chair shots to the head, he can do it. You can't stop him.
If there were a couple of bumps in that match, I just kind of cringed, but as soon as Bryan got up and started moving again, okay.
Specifically, the pile driver, like the mini pile driver one, that got everybody up in arms, and I thought that was a brilliant fucking spot. Yeah. It didn't hurt anything. Yeah, it was done perfectly.
Yeah, one of the suplex looked really...
That German, the killer German, that looked pretty rough. Like, he was supposed to land on his feet and just, like, ended up just go eating shit on his shoulders, but he was fine. But people are like, oh, no, he's reckless. They need to fire him. No, just chill the fuck out. Like, you've obviously never seen fucking indie wrestling, because I've seen people take way worse fucking bumps in front of way less people for way less money.
You clearly never saw a Daniel Bryan match before he missed 4 years for getting fucking hurt. I mean, that.
Or any of his indie stuff, because, like, I remember, like, did he not have a detached retina at one point during a match? Like, yeah.
That cost him the NWA title when they took the NWA title away from TNA, actually, but he couldn't work the final. They ended up putting Adam Pearce in there and having him win it when he'd already been eliminated.
So, I mean, it's just, safety police just really cracked me up at this point in time. Like, okay, it scares you, then don't watch it. End the story. Move along. Get out of my fucking face. All right, so, I guess we should wrap it up. So,
I guess I don't want to plug anything, but I don't know if anything's going to happen. Well, I'll just plug the social media outlet. Find me on Twitter at PW Critique, Facebook or Instagram, Jayhawk1539. Follow off podcast at Not Ready Number 4 PTW on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And you can also email us, notreadythenumber4ptw@gmail.com. Charlie, where can they find you?
Charlie_Butters. And you can try to find my burner account that I created this week. Most people figured it out pretty quick, but it got some really fun comments when I revealed it to a couple people. We didn't talk about it. What did you think of Cody Rhodes' fucking shitty neck tattoo?
Did we not talk about that last week?
Did we talk about it last week?
We might not have.
I don't think we did.
I question anybody getting a neck tattoo, period. But
you know what's really great, though, is there's finally a photo from somebody. Somebody else got the fucking neck tattoo. Same one, on the same spot on their neck.
Yeah, that's stupid.
It's really great. It's so great. I fucking love it. Anyway, check out our podcast friends, Wrestling Cheers, Pod Van Dam, and the Super Fantastic Podcast. Also check out our other non-podcast friends, Good Company in Cleveland, Ohio, and Smoke and Jay's Barbecue. Till next week, folks, wash your hands, stay safe, good night.